this anthology is made up of four short films made by four different directors. And the four directors are the same ones who, a few years ago, there was a movie called Bombay Talkies, which was like a tribute to 100 years of either Indian cinema or Hindi cinema specifically, probably Hindi cinema specifically, that it was the same four directors in that. So the directors are Anurag Kashyap, Zoya Akhtar, Deepakar Banerjee, and Karan Johar. And I guess I'm not totally a fan of Anurag Kashyap or Deepakar Banerjee, and I guess that will show in my thoughts about their films.
Yeah.
But I think overall it's a really cool project. So this is on Netflix. So anyone who has a Netflix account can watch it. It has subtitles. I think it's worth a watch, both for people who are familiar with Bollywood and not, because it's definitely not your typical Bollywood. First of all, it's called Lust Stories, and I think they probably just did that for the shock value, because it's not really about lust.
Yeah.
It has female characters at the core of each of the stories, and it explores her desire or sexuality in some way, but it's not really about lust.
You don't hurt the people you love. Intentionally, you don't. But you always hurt people that you love. You can't hurt somebody that you don't love.
At the beginning, you see her hooking up with a guy, like they're taking a cab home or whatever, and she goes to his place. We don't know how they know each other. But then we find out that she is his professor, because the next day they're in class, and then anyway, without getting into all the details, basically there's these weird like breaking fourth wall kind of moments where she but she doesn't even talk to the camera, she like talks like next to the camera.
Yeah, it's like three-fourths way, you know, diagonal, not really looking at the camera, but just sort of like at, I don't know, some would-be therapist or...
Right, yeah. So, but she basically has these monologues where we're learning about how she's kind of exploring who she is and what she wants, I guess particularly with her relationships and with sexuality and stuff. And she's married, but her husband apparently has encouraged her to go ahead and explore this stuff.
I wanted to ask you, is she really married, or is she like making that part up?
That's a good question, actually. I figured she really was, but maybe that's a device. Maybe that's an excuse she uses to like only take it so far.
Yeah.
So that she's like, well, I'm married, so I'm going to explore, but I can only go so far.
Yeah.
That's a good point, because, there's just a lot of things that are just so weird about this. Like, basically, she embraced so much toxic masculinity in certain ways, with the way she, like, stalked and threatened this young guy that she was hooking up with. Because she's not in love with him or anything, but she is insecure and jealous when he is showing interest in another young woman.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, she herself is also kind of dating someone else. And then, in her weird monologue things, she talks about I love Ayn Rand and
yeah.
And so I was like, ew, and like, I'm selfish. I like to know, like, I just like to have integrity, or I don't know, just some BS. And so it just sounded like some D-bag, like Desi uncle philosophizing. it just when she was doing those monologues, I imagined someone like Anurag Kashyap, the director, like saying that stuff. So I was like, is this a play on, like, but at the same time though, it didn't just subvert it where it put her in the traditional masculine role. It also had her have traditionally feminine qualities too.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, stereotypical feminine qualities, I should say, of being the insecure stalker that like lashes out and is like crazy and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, what are they trying to show?
तो तूने क्या ना बोला था?
नहीं.
नहीं ना? मतलब दोनों को चाहिए था ना? हाँ? तो तू एक काम कर. तू बोल. हाँ. बोल. Consensual था.
क्या बोलूँ?
बोल कि हमारे बीच में जो भी हुआ वो consensual था.
कन क्या था?
Consensual.
Consensual.
Consensual. हाँ. बोल.
Consensual था.
अरे हम दोनों में जो भी कुछ हुआ वो कंसेंशुअल था.
हम दोनों में जो जो कुछ भी हुआ
हाँ
हाँ
वो कंसेंशुअल था.
वो कंसेंशुअल था.
अभी एक साथ बोल.
क्या ये पूरा बोलूँ?
हाँ.
Well, I guess if it was just supposed to provoke, then I guess maybe it did its job in that way, because we do have a lot to say and be like WTF about, and it was only like a 30-minute film, and we're just like, what? There's like so
yeah.
many, one thing upon another, where that we're just like...
I get it, but I don't know.
All right. So then moving on to the second film, this one was directed by Zoya Akhtar, and Bhumi Bednikar plays a maid to a... I guess, young man who has some kind of professional job, and he lives on his own in this flat. But at the beginning of the film, you see them having sex and then kind of going about, like, and then she goes back to cleaning. But before she goes back to cleaning, they kind of have this playful banter with each other where he calls her a dirty bee and she calls him a dirty dog, but
yeah.
in a joking kind of way. So you see that they're, like, I guess, you know, comfortable with each other and almost equals in that particular context where they can talk to each other that way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's kind of a montage of her continuing to just, like, clean up all his stuff and polish and whatever. And then they show his parents visiting. And when the parents visit, they bring a gift for her also and talk to her all sweetly and ask her how she's doing. But then... So it's, you know, several rounds of that where people come in and out and she's cleaning. And then eventually it gets to like an arranged marriage sort of thing where this other woman and her parents come in and they're all having this discussion about these two people getting married. And then Sudha is the maid's character's name. They ask her, the guy's parents ask her to, you know, bring tea and biscuits and stuff. And meanwhile, the guy and the arranged marriage date have gone into the bedroom to just hang out there and talk. So you see Sudha having to bring tea and snacks to everyone, including going into the bedroom. And it's a pretty quiet film. Like, you
yeah.
don't, not a lot goes on, and Sudha barely says a word. But I feel like a lot... I feel like it... was a lot going on emotionally, and so you just have to like pay attention to pick up on those things. I saw someone describe the movie as boring, and I was like, to me it was not boring at all. Like, I feel like I was
a lot of tension.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on it?
I guess you see their the way they look at each other, and you get a sense that, you know, they're pretty close. If you're joking with someone on that level, and I think, were they in the shower? I think they were in the bathroom when they were, you know, talking to each other like that, when she, like, called him a dirty dog. And then it goes from that to they don't really make eye contact through...
Oh, going back to, sorry, the shower thing, I think he was taking a shower and she didn't. And so he's like, oh, you're taking... He was like, you're not going to take a shower, dirty bee. I think that's what he says.
Oh,
you're not
gotcha.
Going to shower. And then she's like, oh, whatever, dirty dog or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, go on.
So, yeah, that's like, it seems like the last time they even make, you know, substantial eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
I think when his parents come, you know, he's sort of just, you know, talking to his parents and, you know, having their... chai and snacks or whatever, and she's just sort of quietly in the background and not even like looking at him, kind of like, you know, you're not even going to pay attention to me. She's just kind of like, this is how it is, you know, I'm just going to go about my duties, you know, take my gifts whenever they give them, and then, you know, leave.
If the interpretation of what her emotion is you know, purposely sort of ambiguous that way. To me, yeah, like it, like you said, I took it as an FML sort of thing where it's like my work, you know, I'm expected to just, you know, make everything look pretty for this guy, clean up everything, even, you know, go to bed with him and satisfy his cravings in all
yeah.
ways. But I know my place sort of thing. And so there's this whole facade of the, you know, the nice liberal family, because they show him and his parents to be very kind and almost treating her like family in the way that they bring her a gift also and stuff. But there's an unspoken boundary that just would not be crossed. Like, there's no way that she would be the daughter-in-law.
Right.
There's no way that that would be her life. And so, yeah, I thought it was like an interesting film. I think I would want to watch it again too, to see like if there were other little things they put in there. Cause actually I didn't think about the shower thing, because that's another, you know, maybe going back to like our discussion about Gala and this whole notion of like what's pure and impure. And I wonder if that's that was done purposely also, where she like didn't get in the shower.
Yeah. And, I think they made her darker in this film. Then, I mean, I don't know when I've seen her before. I think I've seen her in another movie.
I've seen her in a few things. I can't remember if we saw anything together that has her in it.
But I don't know. She seems, from what I saw on, I searched for some images online, and I guess a lot of people are all over the place as far as skin tone, you know, depending on where they're at when the picture's taken, how much lighting is used. But for this film, I felt like they purposely made her darker because she's a maid.
Probably, yeah. And so that's another, you know, colorism issue in Bollywood too, that some Nandita Das, who was a bigger Bollywood star in like the 90s and stuff, has talked about that, how when she would be offered roles where she's supposed to be upper middle class, they would want her to lighten herself. And so I don't know if it's the same with Bhumi Bednekar. Maybe this is her real skin tone, and then they have her become lighter if she's supposed to be a city girl or something.
Gotcha.
Which, that's, you know, pretty annoying, because if that really is her skin tone and she is a city educated person, like, there are people who have all sorts of skin tones all over the place. But for them to like associate you know, certain colors and occupations and stuff, that's interesting.
Moving on to the third film, I don't know, I'm just not enjoying, and I feel like, am I missing something? And literally I feel that way, like when I watch these movies, like, am I missing something? Am I not connecting some dots that would, not that I have to understand everything, you know, in black and white, but I feel like sometimes you may not understand something, but you get the essence of what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
The third film, WTF. Seriously, I have no idea, like, what is happening. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I agree. I really have no idea what that was. So this one was directed by Deepakar Banerjee. I don't know how many other things he's directed before, but the only thing I've seen of his was, I guess, an Indie-ish film called Love, Sex, or Dhoka. And so that was basically an interesting concept where the whole movie is just security camera footage, like, you know, supposed to be scenes from security camera footage that are put together. So you see, you know, different types of scandal that happens. But it just felt like, it is a movie that supposedly called out different forms of exploitation, but it kind of felt like it also exploited in the process. And so, I don't know, something about it just felt gross to me. So when I knew that this movie was directed by him, I was like, what's this perv going to be up to now?
Yeah.
But, there was nothing like, you know, that I felt was exploitative or anything like that in this. It was just weird. So Manisha Koirala is the lead in it. It was nice to see her, because I hadn't seen her since, I guess, the 90s or something. I think she was in a few things here and there. But so she plays a married woman who is having an affair with her husband's best friend, I guess.
Yeah.
And so you see her at the best friend's beach house, and they're like, you know, hanging out and stuff. And then the husband calls and then ends up coming over. And these series of events happen, but you never really understand what her deal is and why she's so nonchalant. Like, I mean, first of all, she's kept this a secret for so long that you would think she is struggling with it.
Yeah.
But then when she reveals it, she's just like, eh.
Everyone's so nonchalant in this movie.
Yeah, and the husband also just like, because he seems so irate and worked up when he first calls too, right? Because he first calls the friend actually and is like, yeah, what's going on? I don't know. Where's my wife and all this stuff? And then he calls her and then, you know, knows she's lying when she first says she was with her friend.
Yeah.
And he's all worked up. But then finally when he does come over and then when she tells him, he's like, oh, okay. And then it's like, what's happening?
Yeah, I think his biggest thing was like, well, when did this happen? Everyone was just so cool in mm-hmm. this movie. It's kind of like, do you care?
Well, actually, the friend cared, right? He's the only one who seemed to care because he, like, didn't want... Like, he was telling Manish Akwarela's character, like, oh, don't say anything to him. It'll ruin, like, your marriage and it'll ruin my friendship with him. So he's the only one who seems to care. And is that...
Yeah, but I felt like even his freaking out was not really freaking out. I yeah. felt like everybody... I don't know, did they, like, have... some, you know, downers before
right.
they begin filming. I don't know. I felt like everything was just very subdued. And it kind of made me like, should we as the audience care too? Like, I mean, if people are just kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, except if you want to talk about the end scene.
Oh my gosh, the end scene. See, the endings. I have a problem with all the damn endings. I have no idea what the hell the ending is. Basically, they've had their weekend or, you know, night. Oh, yeah, the husband sleeps over.
Yeah.
He sleeps over after he finds out that, you know, his friend and his wife have cheated. Okay, I'm tired. Let me just stay here. No, I feel like that's when you, you know, either burn the house down and leave. Or, you know, you beat somebody up and then leave. But the bottom line is you leave. You don't stay there like, I'm tired of this. All right, so after they've had their weekend and everyone is well rested because they're so cool anyway, next day, you know, husband and wife are in the car and he's asking her again, I think something like, you know, when did this happen? Was I around? And then she's... like very nonchalant. I forget what her answer was. Very
vague. She was basically like, because he was like, so when you started the affair, had we had a fight around then? And she's like, no, things were good.
Yeah, so just very cool about it. And then this, I had music, sort of like, you know, EDM music comes on, you know, slowly builds. And then by the time she either, I don't know if she received a call or if she was making a call, whoever was on the other line, she was very excited about it. And it's like this open mouth smile or laugh, but then it does a freeze frame. So it's like her mouth is open and she's on the phone and then this electronic music is playing in the background and that's how the movie ends. So it's like, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that was really weird. You know, as we're talking about this, because I'm noticing that this is a huge contrast to like the first film. Where the first film was like such overhyped emotions and just weird reactions to things and people getting overly excited and stuff.
True.
So I'm wondering to what extent, like, I'm wondering to what extent they kind of coordinated this or like knew what each other's projects were and like put it in this deliberate sequence.
Yeah.
Where as a continuum, it's saying something. I don't know what.
Well, yeah, that's. A silver lining, I guess.
And then I guess we end with the climax. Yeah. Gun and Jumper's film.
<Ba-dum-bum>.
So this is definitely like Keijo all grown up from K3G. I really love what he did with this. So the main, you know, character in this, she plays a teacher and she kind of looks to Neha Dubia's character as her mentor of sorts, and she goes to her for different advice about love and marriage and pleasure and whatever. And so she's considering marrying Vicky Kaushal's character, and she does. And then they basically show a montage of them sleeping together and her not feeling too satisfied for several rounds. And then one day she sees Neha Dubia's character pleasuring herself in a not very discreet part of the school where there's like a glass like window looking into the room.
Office. Yeah. It like a, I don't know, not even like her office. I think anyone can use that office.
Yeah, it was like some, I don't know, some staff like room or something. I don't know what it was. So Kiara's character, I forgot what her name is supposed to be, but she's looking in, and then Nihad Dibia's character is like, yeah, you know, men can't help you the way you can help yourself, sort of thing. So then, you know, she's feeling inspired to take matters into her own hands. So she gets a vibrator, which is like a remote controlled vibrator.
Yeah.
And is about to use it, you know, goes in her room and all this stuff. And then, of course, like, the family calls her out and is like, oh, like, you know, your husband just got in this accident and blah, blah, you have to come. And so she's like, damn it. And so she goes out into the family room, apparently with this device still in her. And then, you know, they're having their conversation or whatever. And then the grandmother of the house, actually, I don't know if I should give, well, okay, spoiler alert. I'm going to give away everything that happens. So
yeah, this entire episode is
spoiled. Yeah. So the grandmother of the house gets a hold of the remote control, and Gabi Gushi Gabi Gum is on the TV. And so she's like trying to like, you know, do whatever, like turn the volume up or down or change the channel or whatever she's trying to do. But she ends up controlling this vibrator.
Yeah.
And so then...
she actually turns it up because she's trying to turn the volume up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then we see her, you know, peaking, climaxing in front of everyone and kind of enjoying it. I mean, she's kind of like, oh shit. But then she's also like, you know what? I don't even care. Like, I'm going to let this happen. And so, and then it, the climax is at the last, you know, when Lata Mangeshkar sings the last Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham. So I thought that was just so great. Like it really made me laugh out loud. I thought this was like a really great film.
And that's where it should have ended.
Exactly. Yeah. I totally agree. I think it should have just ended right there. I don't think it needed to go into this whole weird epilogue sort of thing about, you know, like the parents being, you know, his mother being so like offended and talking about how they should get a divorce and all this stuff.
Yeah, because didn't she say like it was a family matter?
Yeah. And then even after that, another scene where the husband and her are having a conversation. He's like, hey, look, I don't want to get a divorce. Like, can't we work it out? And or like saying, you know, I'll forgive you or something. And then she's like, no, I didn't do anything wrong, though. Like, it's not right. Yeah, the setting was wrong. But like, it's not wrong for me to like, you know, want to have desire and to seek pleasure, basically. And then I guess it ends with him feeding her a spoon of ice cream. Because I guess she's from... In the beginning, at some point, she said something about how she wished she could share ice cream with someone or something.
Yeah.
So I guess it's showing that he's now going to be more attentive to her needs and stuff. Which I guess is sweet, but I think it should have just ended on the vibrator thing.
All right. So moving on from that, I guess overall thoughts of the whole collection of movies.
I think it's worth checking out. One of the critics who discussed it said that you actually have to watch, like, that she really recommends watching it all in order, because I guess since it's Netflix, you can kind of flip around and watch it in different orders. So I still don't really get why you need to watch it in order and what the significance is of how they all play off of each other.
Yeah.
So maybe we should watch it again. Also, we didn't really pay attention to the beginning credits. There's like a whole... all these illustrations or animations or something, and we weren't paying attention to that. So I kind of want to watch that again, too.
All right.
I also want to watch all of these again. Well, I already have seen Vire the Wedding twice, but I want to see Kala again, too. And I also am motivated to, like, learn more about different things that it touches upon.
Alright, so as I mentioned before, this episode is a bit hard to edit because we perpetually have more to say about it. As I'm putting this together now, I hear LRK laughing watching Lust Stories, which is different than the first go. So let's see what she has to say about it.
Yeah, so I'm watching Lust Stories again. I'm watching the first of the four films now with Radhika Apte. And I think I'm enjoying it more. I think the first time I just didn't know at all like what to expect. And I was like, why are they just showing her to be so nuts? I don't know. I think because I knew it was an anthology and there was kind of a woman at the core of each story.
Yeah.
I just found it a bit jarring that they made her character like just so insane and like not likable. Because I was like, you know, here's the opportunity to show lust stories like from a woman's perspective, or at least somehow being uplifting to women or something. And I was like, what is this? Like, and you know, they have her say things that are stereotypically like things guys would say or whatever. But I don't know, somehow watching it again, I'm just really enjoying her performance. Like, she's not likable at all, but somehow like just the things she's saying and the way she's acting, it's amusing to me now. It might be also because in between I watched an interview of the four directors, including Anurag Kashyap, who's the director of this. And he said that it wasn't really scripted. It was kind of like he told her the concept and then she kind of just ran with it and apparently ad-libbed a lot of it or just came up with the specific dialogues, you know, on the fly during the scenes. And so somehow knowing that is just kind of amusing. Like, just knowing that she kind of, it was like an improv for her. So I think I might be enjoying it on that level as an improv. I still don't think it's particularly good as a film, because I feel like they had an opportunity to be more deliberate and like script something like good. But I think as an experimental project, as kind of an improv, as her just coming up with these things off the cuff, I think it's entertaining.
Yeah, and I wonder if that was her take on the character. Maybe she was figuring it out as she's going along. I mean, the actor and the character. I don't know. Okay, so you think the, I guess, performance is warranted?
Yeah, I mean, I guess she's doing justice to... I mean, I don't know how he pitched it to her. Like, what the story is supposed to be about, what they're trying to convey through it, what the character's supposed to be. I'm not really sure. I'd be interested in hearing like what their discussion was about it and how she came up with this, with these lines and all of that. But, you know, just when she was doing her little monologues, and I think her acting is pretty good and natural for being that type of like douchey character. But like, she has these really natural kind of gestures. Like, she's like scratching her ear as she's like, philosophizing about like, oh, you know, I mean, what's wrong if I love, you know, my husband and I also love this other guy, will they feel hurt? Yeah, they probably will a little bit, but blah, blah, blah. And just like, I don't know, it's entertaining. So yeah, like, he was sad. Like, when he found out, he was just like, he definitely was devastated, and like in bed he was like on this like turned to the side crying. But then I don't know if you remember the part where he turns toward her and then he's weirdly like clawing her head and stuff, and she just has this expression, like petrified expression. So I was like, oh my god, is he like killing her or something? But obviously he wasn't, because then the next morning they're like fine and packing up to leave and stuff. But I don't know what that scene was. I don't know if you want to watch that again.
So he was crying? I must have missed that.
Yeah.
Huh.
And she's like feeling bad.
Oh, he is crying.
Yeah. And I guess like from the earlier dialogues, I took it that she, like, they kind of got in a fight on the phone and he was just being an asshole and basically putting her down and being like, what, you're nothing on your own, you can only be anything because I allow you to be. And so I think she was just like so over it, you know, and then she was like, okay, fine, I'm just gonna do what I can to break his heart now.
No, I guess he was feeling the feels.
Mm-hmm. But then what is this scene?
Did I miss this whole part?
No, I think we watched it because we saw, we did notice that, I do remember seeing this clawing weird part and we were like, uh-oh, what's happening? Like, look at her face.
Yeah, this does look a little weird. Why is it just claw hanging?
Yeah, doesn't it look like he's strangling her or something? I don't get...
Yeah, it is going that way. Like, jabbing her in the eye.
Yeah. And then she's all calm the next morning.
Alright, so maybe I was a little harsh on that part. About him staying over.
Yeah, he did mention, before he knew, he mentioned, oh, I drove all the way here. Like, so, I guess it was a long distance, so he was planning to crash anyway.
Okay, so maybe they were a bit more emotive than I gave them credit for. I still think the ending is like, what the hell?
Yeah, I didn't get the ending at all. I kind of get, like, you know, the beginning through middle, because you don't know who they are and how they're connected with each other in the beginning. Like, it, the very first scene, like, these two are on the beach, and Sudhir is, like, sitting on the sand, and Manisha Kwarela's character, Rina, I guess, is in the water, and he's, like, commenting on her and stuff, and it's as if they're, like, you know, a married couple or, like, a couple, and then they're, like, in bed and stuff, and she's like, oh, the girls haven't even called, so you think that maybe, like, they're on vacation and they have kids that are, like, at home or something, and then you find out that, like, she's married, and they show him watching, like, videos of himself and stuff when he's, like, in his room, like, when Manisha and the husband are having the conversation, he's just, like, watching videos on his laptop of himself, talking about how he became a cardiologist because his father didn't have, like, money for a surgery or something.
Is he doing, like, a commercial or something? Why is he watching himself?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh. I guess maybe he's just looking at old interviews and, like, just reflecting on stuff. I don't know.
I see.
But he's, I guess, thinking about how he became a cardiologist, and then he at some point says something to the effect of... something about a reversible condition, like, oh, it's reversible, you just have to start taking care of yourself. So I don't know if that's supposed to be, like, his sort of philosophy on life, and he just thinks, like, he's has kind of, like, an optimistic outlook, because he's always encouraging her to go back to him, and, you know, he's like, yeah, why don't you just, you know, go fix things.
So let's get into Geats. LRK, what do we have this time?
I haven't really prepared anything specific.
Okay.
But I thought, since there's these three great diverse projects that we've seen, that we've talked about, Gala, Vide de Wedding, and Lust Stories.
Yeah.
We can maybe talk about the music. The soundtracks that went with them.
Okay.
I haven't really listened to them other than while watching those films. I don't know if you have, but I guess since they're all fairly new and we saw them all recently, we could just give our overall impressions of them.
Okay. So this was at the beginning of the movie, I think. Dope Daddy, Stony Psycho. I don't know if that's one of the rappers that...
It says the singers are Hari Harasudhan and Santosh Narayanan, but one of the writers is Dopa Delish and Arun Raja Kamaraj.
I wonder if that's Dope Daddy, like his rap name.
Right, that could be.
Black Diamond, the Black Panther, our savior. I'm reading the subtitles. So yeah, I don't know.
I'm wondering, yeah, because the subtitles made a lot of references to Black Panther, and it might have said that, but I wonder how much they changed it just because they thought people might get Black Panther, like I don't know, since the new Black Panther just came out, they thought that, because I've seen, like, in Bollywood movies sometimes, they'll change, like, Darla Dalal, who's like a chef, they'll make it Martha Stewart, or they'll make Amitabh Bachchan into, like, Tom Cruise or whatever, you know, like, they'll just change the reference, gotcha. So I'm wondering if they really said Black Panther, but they may have, because Kala means black, and then,
And I guess he's supposed to be like the Black Panther, the savior of his people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right, so music from other movies.
So I noticed while watching this again, I noticed that the first film opens with an old school Bollywood song. And I did like that. And I think maybe the fact that it opened with that old song made me hope that this film would be, like, really good, too. Because it's, like, a classic. And, you know, obviously this film is in a modern setting. And it's one of the four lust stories. So I didn't think it was going to be, like, a classic Bollywood kind of look. But I thought it would be, like... Yeah. I think the songs that first song that appeared in the film kind of put me in a mood to watch a movie. So I like that. But as far as the background score, like in the credits and stuff, and as well as in the trailer, I was like, what is this music? It doesn't seem connected at all to like what I imagined these stories to be about. And now that I've seen them, the trailer music is not fitting at all. But yeah, I'll have to sort of watch these films again to see what music they actually have in them. On the horizon for Deets and Geeks, two movies we'll be watching very shortly are The First Purge and Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You. I'm sure we'll have lots to say about those projects, which are both social commentaries on racism. Ant-Man and the Wasp is also coming out soon, and then we can marvel over that a little bit too. And in Geets, we're going to the Kacey Musgraves and Harry Styles concert next week, so I think we'll have a good mouthful for the next Geets and Geets.
Yeah, definitely.